Hi there. Welcome to another edition of the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got two stories coming up this hour. They are both from True Confessions magazine. This first one is called Beneath My Wings. Here is the story. I love visiting your mom, Mike said. There's just something so homey and welcoming about your parents' house. I guess, I responded doubtfully. The truth was, visiting the home I'd been raised in always made me feel slightly claustrophobic. Everywhere you turned, there were old photographs of my sister and me, teddy bear ornaments, recipes tacked to the fridge, crocheted cushion covers and afghans, and boxes of toys. Nothing ever changed. Mom lived in the past, trapped in some sort of time bubble, as if Karen and me were still little kids. Have you got the gift? Mike asked as he pulled up outside the neat little ranch house I knew so well. Check, I said, indicating the gift-wrapped snow globe sitting on my lap. It was Mom's birthday, and snow globes were yet another thing she loved to collect. Mike turned to me. Are you okay, honey? Sure. I forced a smile, not sure how to tell my husband how I was really feeling. Lately, I'd been so scared that, in spite of chasing promotions and pay raises all these years, I was going to end up just like my mom, trapped at home with only soap operas and crafts for company. Mike leaned over and kissed me lightly, and then I was following him up the path to my parents' front door. I couldn't help smiling affectionately at his eagerness. Unlike me, Mike hadn't had the luxury of being raised in a loving home by parents who thought the world of him. Instead, he'd gone from foster home to foster home before joining the army at the age of 18. He owned his own business now, repairing home computers, but sometimes I thought that nothing made Mike happier than finally having people in his life he could call Mom and Dad. Becky, Mike! Mom beamed and opened her arms wide to hug us both. On her 60th birthday, she looked fresh and pretty in blue jeans and an embroidered pink sweater, her shoulder-length hair streaked generously with gray. The house smelled of chicken, pot pie, and chocolate chip cookies, and my sister Karen was setting the table with the help of my 3-year-old niece, Allison. "Well, hi there," Karen said, nodding in my direction. How's my hotshot sister doing today? Great, thanks, I replied. It looked like Karen still hadn't forgiven me for the fight we'd had nearly a year ago. She'd come right out and asked me when I planned to start a family. You're not getting any younger, she reminded me. A fancy home and lifestyle aren't everything, you know, and Mike would love some kids. I advised her to keep her nose out of my business, but she'd been right about Mike. He wanted a family more than anything. Already he was on his knees chatting happily to Allison, smiling as she told him all about the new playgroup she was attending. It's a mother and toddler group, Karen explained. We think she's still far too young to be left alone in a group, right, James? Right. My agreeable brother-in-law nodded obediently, and I felt a stab of pity for him. Life with Karen couldn't be easy. I escaped to the kitchen to help my parents. Dad grinned at me. Hey, sweetie. Sorry I didn't come out to say hi. I had my hands full. Hi, Dad, I said, giving him a kiss as he mashed a large pan of potatoes. I picked up a platter of flaky bread rolls from the counter and took them through to the dining room, then went back for plates. Minutes later, we were ready to eat. The table, set with Mom's best plates and with a centerpiece of pink roses, and several prettily wrapped gifts looked beautiful. "Oh, I'm so happy we're all together like this," Mom smiled. "It's just perfect." "Grandma, open up your presents," Allison piped up. "She will, after we've eaten and all had some cake," Karen said. "That's the trouble with my family. I thought nothing ever changed." Every single year on her birthday, Mom had her favorite meal with just family around the table, then blew out the candles on her birthday cake and opened her presents. She wouldn't have dreamed of going to a restaurant or, heaven forbid, flying someplace with Dad for a getaway. My family was deeply traditional. Men worked and women stayed home to raise the children. Mom had a career once. She'd been a nurse, but the second Dad put a ring on her finger, she'd forgotten all about having a life of her own. I knew my parents were proud of me for going to college and getting a degree, but I often suspected they wished I was a housewife like Karen instead of a senior buyer for a chain of fashion stores. Dad cleaned off the table with Karen's help and moments later emerged from the kitchen with a cake that was ablaze with 60 candles. "Oh, Roger, it's beautiful," Mom said as we all began to sing happy birthday. Dad began to cut into the elaborate cake, and I felt a pang of nerves. As if he could read my mind, Mike reached for my hand and gave it a reassuring squeeze. "Watching your figure again?" Karen asked snidely when I refused a slice of cake. I resisted the urge to stand and run from the house. Mom started by opening Dad's gift, an elegant silk nightdress and a gift voucher for her favorite craft store. Then she opened Karen and James, smiling with pleasure at a pretty pearl brooch. When she reached for the gift me and Mike had bought, I felt my mouth go dry. "What can this be?" she said, peeling the tape off with agonizing slowness to reveal a heavy cardboard box. "Is it a snow globe?" "It is." Smiling, Mom carefully slid the heavy wood and glass ornament from its box and gazed down in wonder. The scene inside the globe showed an older woman and a small child wrapped heavily against the weather. Oh, I see. Okay. Hand in hand, they trudged up a snowy path toward a house that was lit up in welcome. A large sign hung across the pretty Victorian house. It read, "Welcome, Grandma." Mom simply stared for a moment, and then her eyes locked up to meet mine, holding a single silent question. I nodded slowly. Without a word, she handed the globe to Dad and hurried across the table to gather Mike and me in her arms. When she released us, I could see tears in her eyes. "Guys, this is the best birthday gift I've ever had," she said, her voice choked. Mike laughed. "We thought you'd like it." Dad had seen the snow globe and was waiting his turn for a hug. I'd never seen him look happier. "Oh, this is unbelievable," Mom was saying. "When are you due, Becky?" "Early fall," I said. "Congratulations," Karen said, her voice cool. "I'm guessing this is going to change things quite a bit for you and Mike." "Well, no intention of giving up work," I said quickly. Karen raised her eyebrows. "Just make sure you take things easy," Mom said. I nodded, already beginning to feel uncomfortable. I wasn't sick and didn't want any fuss made over this. Millions of women all over the world gave birth every day, then returned to work without a backward glance. I may have been a bit older than the average first-time mom. I was 34, but I was in great shape. If I ate right and exercised in moderation, there was no reason why I shouldn't feel wonderful over the coming months and then go back to work without missing a beat. But it didn't work out quite the way I planned. Almost from the moment I'd seen the plus sign on the pregnancy test, I'd started feeling queasy. I usually loved coffee. Now the faintest whiff of a coffee bean made me want to be violently ill. I was disappointed when my nausea and tiredness hadn't entirely worn off once I hit the 3-month mark. "Hey, every woman is different," Mike said one evening, echoing what the doctor had told me that afternoon. "I know that," I snapped. "It's all right for you, isn't it? You're not the one throwing up every morning." "Honey, I'm so sorry," he said straight away. "Listen, I'm going to start getting up a little earlier each morning, okay? I'll bring you some crackers and some of that hot tea you like." As he held me, I felt tears fill my eyes. I hardly knew myself these days. It was as if I was turning into a different person. I was mean to Mike when all he was trying to do was take care of me, and I had the nasty feeling I wasn't doing so great at work. Normally, I loved my job. I had a good eye for new trends and enjoyed zipping around to appointments and shows. But suddenly, all I wanted to do was snuggle on the couch all day, snoozing and watching television. "You've got a day off tomorrow," Mike reminded me. "Your mom's coming over, right? You can just spend the whole day relaxing." He was right, but I was just too on edge to relax and enjoy anything, even a visit from Mom. Looking back, I realize I was terrified. I had a lot of skills, but caring for a tiny, helpless baby wasn't one of them. All my life, I'd found success with everything I tried, and suddenly I was sure I was going to fall, or fail, that is. Mom arrived at noon with a salad to go with the soup I'd made and some cheesecake for dessert. It was my favorite strawberry, but I'd already gained more weight than I wanted to. "Just a little slice won't hurt," Mom said. "You look wonderful, by the way." "Well, I feel huge," I said. "It's probably a big baby," she replied, smiling. "Big babies run in our family." I didn't answer as she glanced critically around. "You do know you're going to have to fit locks on all these kitchen cabinets, don't you, Becky?" Gritting my teeth, I took 2 soup bowls from the cupboard. "Slip covers might be a good idea for your furniture, too," Mom added. "Somehow I don't think white upholstery and babies go together very well." "I'm not going to worry about any of that right now," I said. "Hey, did I tell you about the new person I'm training at work to fill in for me while I'm on maternity leave? Susan's young, but she's full of energy and ideas, and I'm getting a real kick out of working with her." I poured soup into the bowls and joined Mom at the table. She gave me a worried look. "How long does this maternity leave last?" 6 weeks, I replied. 6 weeks? She almost dropped her spoon. "I think that's plenty of time," I nodded. Mom shook her head slowly. "Well, I'm not so sure. A 6-week-old baby is still pretty tiny, you know." "I know that, but the baby will be fine," I said, trying not to show my annoyance. "Maybe you should ask your boss for more time off," Mom suggested. It was the last straw. "And maybe you should mind your own business," I snapped. Mom looked shocked. I'm sorry. I'm never going to be the kind of mom you were, okay?" I said, feeling my face growing flushed. "I have no interest whatsoever in staying home all day trying out new recipes and watching television." There was a long silence. Mom stared at me, looking hurt, and I felt a flicker of shame. But I'd be darned if I were going to back down and apologize. I was going to be a working mom no matter what my family had to say about it. And raising children, Mom said quietly. I frowned. What? I wasn't just trying new recipes and watching television all day, Mom pointed out softly. I was raising you and your sister. I sighed impatiently. And I'll raise my child, Mom, but I'll have a career at the same time. It might be tougher than you think. I felt another rush of anger. Why do you hate me having a career? Is it because you threw yours away when you married Dad? I didn't throw anything away, Mom said. I started doing what I'd always dreamed of, making a home with a good man and devoting myself to raising a family. Well, I'd go out of my mind. I want more than that, I said. Again, there was a long silence. I could see the tears in Mom's eyes, but I refused to back down. All I did was say what was on my mind. She thought it was fine to tell me I should change all my furniture and stay home. It was a difficult job, Mom said finally. There were days when I was very lonely for another adult to talk to, but I wouldn't have changed anything for the world because you and Karen needed me. Times have changed, I said. There's no reason why a woman shouldn't have a career and raise a child. Mom looked as if she wanted to reply, but she bit her lip and stayed silent. The conversation moved on, but the atmosphere remained clouded after our exchange, and I was still thinking about it when Mike came home that night. He frowned when I told him how annoyed I was with Mom. Becky, your mom's from a different generation, he pointed out. Maybe you shouldn't have been so hard on her. I stared at him in disbelief. I don't appreciate anyone telling me how to live my life, not even my mom. I think you're overreacting, he said, shaking his head. I mean, your mom's right. We are going to need to put locks on all our cabinet doors, and it is going to be tricky juggling our working lives with parenthood. I threw my hands up in the air, giving up. It seemed that nobody could see things my way, not even my own husband. I was quiet with Mike all evening, staying cool with him when he tried to talk. At bedtime, I climbed in beside him, gave my pillow a punch, and turned away. Good night, sweetheart, he said. Night, I replied. It never took Mike long to fall asleep, and pretty soon he was snoring softly while I lay awake, staring into the darkness and brooding. I should have been so happy. I had a husband who loved me, a baby on the way, a fabulous career, and a beautiful home. Yet a nagging sensation of fear and anxiety never seemed to leave me alone these days. I was afraid I'd be a lousy mom, afraid I wouldn't be able to do my job properly. And now, thanks to my mom, afraid that the home I'd made with Mike would be destroyed by a messy baby. I guess all my adult life I defined myself as a career woman. When I took time off, I couldn't wait to get back into the office to see what was going on. I knew how to do my job. I loved it. It was me, and now all that was about to change. For years, I'd been saying I'd have a baby someday. Now that someday had almost arrived, and I didn't think I could cope. My eyes filled with tears in the moment before. I gasped with shock. I half sat up, wondering if my imagination was working overtime, but then I felt it again, a tiny, unmistakable kick. The baby was kicking. I gave a little squeal of excitement and rolled over. Mike, wake up. He muttered. Becky, is everything okay? The baby's moving, I said, grabbing his hand. Feel it. Mike, it's kicking. Are you sure? He spread his large hand on my tummy. I shifted it slightly just in time for Mike to feel another tiny kick. In the darkness, we laughed like a pair of excited kids, and a sudden, certain peace settled over me. I loved this baby. Mike had fallen in love with this, Mike had fallen in love the second he saw the ultrasound images, but the moment I felt our child moving inside me was the moment I lost my heart. I felt like I could move mountains. Anything and everything was possible. I'd keep my job, raise not just this baby, but also a couple of others, and make a fabulous success of everything I touched. As I fell asleep in Mike's arms, I just knew everything was going to be okay. As the months went by, I felt better and better physically. My ever-increasing bump didn't stop me from taking long walks, getting back into the routine of things at work, and helping Mike put the finishing touches on the baby's nursery. I was so proud of it when it was finished. The walls were a soft, misty shade of green, and the elaborate wooden crib was filled with stuffed squirrels, rabbits, and chipmunks. A friend of Mike's had painted a mural on the walls, a woodland scene complete with trees, wildflowers, and little birds. Mike was so excited by how spectacular the nursery looked that he invited my family over for lunch to see it. I was a little reluctant because things had been strained between Mom and me. It wasn't really Mom's fault. She had apologized and was making an effort for us to get along, but I couldn't get rid myself of some last lingering feelings of resentment that my family seemed so resistant to the idea of me being a working mom. Mike was adding some finely chopped onions and bacon pieces to a big bowl of potato salad when the doorbell rang. I fixed a smile on my face and went to answer it. Mom was looking as happy as if there'd been no problem between us, and Dad gave me a hug. James, my brother-in-law, was smiling, but Karen was looking strained. Your tummy is getting fat, Aunt Becky, Allison said, staring at me wide-eyed. That's because your cousin is in there waiting to be born, Mom explained as we all laughed. Well, honey, how are you doing? Dad asked as we all sat down to eat. Pretty good, I said, helping myself to some quiche. The baby's kicking up a storm, Mike added proudly. I smiled but noticed my sister staring miserably down into her lap. Is everything okay, Karen? I asked. She shrugged. Sure. The meal went well, and I decided not to worry about Karen's mood. In spite of the fact that there were just 2 years between us, my sister and I had never been close. I often thought that Karen was more like Mom, a homebody interested in cooking and crafts, while I was more like Dad, an extrovert who wanted to conquer the world. As soon as we'd finished eating, Mike stood up, eager to show off the nursery. We led the way, with my family following us up the stairs, and I felt a little rush of excitement. The nursery was so picture perfect, and I couldn't wait to share it with everyone. Mike slowly opened the door, and my family walked in, speechless. Mom touched the satiny wood of the crib, while Dad gazed around at the stuffed animals, the walls, and the antique rocking chair in the corner. It's incredible, he said. You didn't do this all by yourself, did you? Mom asked. It's like something out of a magazine. Mike's friend did the mural, I said. It must have cost a small fortune, Karen remarked, her voice cold. No, he gave us a reduced rate. Mike told her. We were lucky. Yes, very lucky, Karen said expressionlessly. Well, this is just going to be a perfect space for the baby, Mom said. I love it. I've never seen anything like it. It's amazing, guys, Dad said. We think so, Mike said. Does anyone want coffee? Downstairs again, the kitchen soon filled with the rich smell of brewing coffee. I was over my nausea now, but stuck to tea, which I knew Karen also preferred. I looked around, but she was nowhere to be seen. Wandering from the kitchen, I glanced upstairs, where the nursery door still stood open, and there I found Karen, perched on the edge of the rocking chair, gazing at the birds and trees adorning the nursery walls. Oh, there you are, I said. Hey, do you want some tea? Fine, she said quietly. I hesitated. Is everything okay? She looked at me and I saw tears in her eyes. For you it is. Everything always turns out okay for you, Becky, doesn't it? I'm not sure about that, I responded softly. Karen nodded. You have a brilliant career. Your house looks like it belongs in a magazine spread, and now you're going to have a baby. I thought you wanted me to start a family, I said, exasperated. And everyone is making such a huge fuss, like you're some kind of celebrity, she went on. Just because this is my first, I said. It's not fair, she yelled. I'm pregnant, but do you think anyone will even notice? Do you think my baby will get a fancy nursery like this? She glared at me, tears dripping down her face. You're pregnant? I was filled with a sudden, unexpected tenderness for my little sister and crossed the room to give her a hug. But that's wonderful. She shrugged me off. Actually, it's not wonderful, Becky. James' hours have just been cut again, and we don't live in luxury like you and Mike. We live in a crummy little apartment. But we'll all help out, I started to say. You just don't get it, do you? She got to her feet and stalked from the room, thumping down the stairs. I sighed, closing my eyes as I wondered what had just happened. It had honestly never occurred to me that Karen might be jealous of my lifestyle. She always seemed so perfectly content. Slowly, I went downstairs. Karen and James were at the open front door on their way out with a confused-looking Allison. Do you really have to leave? I called out. Afraid so, Karen said, giving me a brief glance. Then they were gone, and Mom gave me a troubled look. What was all that about? Did you say something to upset her? No, I did not, I snapped. Trust Mom to take Karen's side. If it was about you returning to work so soon after the baby comes along, I'm afraid Karen has strong feelings about that, Mom said, and I agree with her. It was as if something in me snapped. For your information, Mom, it wasn't about that, I yelled, but thanks so much for once again making your feelings crystal clear. I stomped from the kitchen and ran upstairs, furious. As I lay on the bed, I could hear the hum of urgent conversation floating up from below me before the front door closed quietly. Then I heard Mike's footsteps. Hey, he said, coming to sit on the bed. Are you okay, hon? I guess. I gave a huge sigh as I began telling him about my conversation with Karen. Why did Mom immediately have to assume I'd done something wrong? I demanded. She wanted to come up and apologize, Mike said, but I thought it would be best if you could just cool off for a while.
We'll drop by your parents' house tomorrow to smooth things over. I don't think so, I said, staring at him incredulously. Mike began to argue with me, but I had no intention of changing my mind. I could be very stubborn when I wanted to be, and I was insistent about this. As far as I was concerned, Mom had never understood or supported me, and from now on, she wouldn't even have to bother. I was out of her life. I knew the situation really saddened Mike. He thought the world of my parents, and it was in his nature to try and fix difficult situations. Mike was a born peacemaker, and as the last few weeks of my pregnancy rolled by, my husband was torn. He wanted me to be happy, wanted to be on my side, but he didn't want to cut my parents out of our lives and deprive our baby of grandparents. I understood how Mike felt, but I wouldn't give an inch on this. Tyler Joseph came along 2 days early, a dark-haired little boy with his father's bright eyes and peaceful nature. Every time I held him in my arms, I melted with love. I thought I was prepared for his birth. I had the diapers and all the equipment, the clothes and tiny socks. But what I hadn't been prepared for was the way Tyler made me feel. I was amazed by the love I felt. I could have sat and stared at him all day. I didn't object when Mike called my parents on his cell phone and they rushed to the hospital to visit us. In a way, I wanted to see Mom more than anything in the world. It was just through sheer stubbornness I refused to let her back into my heart. I knew she'd think the world of Tyler, but when Mom walked into my hospital room, her eyes went straight to me and she hurried over, her voice soft with love. Are you okay, sweetheart? I nodded. She'd knitted two beautiful little jackets for her grandson, and when I saw the way my parents looked at Tyler, my heart swelled with pride. Hey, handsome, Mom cooed. He's a strong-looking little thing, isn't he? Dad said. Our first grandson. Mom turned to me anxiously. You won't be a stranger, will you? You'll come and see us? I knew what that question meant. Mom wanted my reassurance that everything was back to normal, but I wasn't sure that it was or when it would be. The way she'd treated me still hurt. You can see Tyler as often as you'd like, I said, my voice noncommittal, and I saw hurt flicker in her eyes. The next few months weren't easy for us as a new family. Cutting Mom out of my life hurt me as much as it did her, but I was too pig-headed to admit it to myself. There were times I longed to pick up the phone and tell her what Tyler and me were doing that day and how cute he looked in the jackets she'd knitted him. Instead, I spent my days alone, taking my son for long walks and thinking. I thought about my childhood a lot, wondering how Tyler's would compare. Although money had often been in short supply, Karen and me had never seemed to go without. Mom made us clothes herself, saved up her housekeeping money for extras at Christmas, and scoured the classifieds for bikes and dollhouses. The shabby spots on our couch and carpet were covered with brightly colored afghans, but the love in the house had more than made up for the lack of luxury. As the weeks of my maternity leave sped by, I became depressed. I didn't want to leave Tyler while I went to work, even though we'd found a part-time nanny who was efficient, gentle, and energetic. I wanted to care for my baby myself, yet at the same time, I missed the challenge of work. There didn't seem to be a solution, and I grew more and more anxious. I hoped my feelings would disappear when I returned to work, but they didn't. I missed Tyler so badly I could barely focus, and when my name came up for a promotion, I wanted to cry. I didn't want more money and more responsibilities. I wanted Tyler. Why don't you wait a few weeks and then see how you feel? Mike suggested one evening. You don't have to give them an answer straight away. I nodded, looking down at Tyler, who was asleep in my arms, pink and perfect in his pajamas. I knew I should lay him down in his crib, but this was the first time I'd held him all day. The phone rang, and moments later, Mike handed it to me, frowning. It was my dad. Becky, it's your mother, he said, and my heart tightened in terror. She's had a slight stroke and is in the hospital for observation. I'll be right there, I said as Mike took Tyler from my arms. Dad had told me the stroke was just a mild one, but that didn't make me any less scared as I drove off that night. I'd always looked down on Mom, pitied her a little for being just a housewife, and I wished with all my heart that it hadn't taken this to make me see how wrong I was. Karen was in the lobby of the hospital waiting for me, and without a word we walked straight into each other's arms, then rode up in the elevator to see Mom. I smiled sadly at the little bump that was Karen's tummy. I haven't seen you in so long. She squeezed my hand. I'm sorry I was so stupid, Becky. I squeezed back. We both were. Mom was sitting up in bed, and she looked tired more than anything else. Her face lit up in a smile when Karen and me walked in. We hugged her gently. I'm fine, she insisted. I don't know what all the fuss is about. Dad brought us all tea, and we talked for the next 30 minutes, mostly about Allison, Tyler, and the new baby Karen was expecting. Mom didn't want to talk about herself, and that wasn't unusual. She never did. Mom loved taking care of others, especially her kids. I saw her for the first time that everything my mother did was an act of love. I was still thinking about her the next day when I visited the house to see how Dad was doing. Nothing really needed tidying up, but I moved around the kitchen and family room, remembering Mom had done so much more than cook, sew, and clean. She had encouraged me in everything I did, quietly working to make my dreams come true. She'd driven miles so that I could attend special classes, and when I was exhausted from studying, Mom had always been there with a cup of tea and a word of support. Mom had helped me believe in myself, been my cheerleader, and kept me going. All these years, she'd been the wind beneath my wings. It seemed so obvious now. Why had I never seen it before? When I tucked Tyler into his crib that night, I watched my sleeping baby long after his musical mobile had stopped turning, deep in thought. Mike came into the nursery and spoke softly. Becky, is everything okay, hon? Nodding, I turned and smiled at him. Look at Tyler. Doesn't he look so peaceful? We stood together in the darkness, and I took my husband's hand. Mike, I thought I knew everything when he was born, but what I didn't know was that my priorities would change so much. If you want to stay home, that's fine, Mike said immediately. I'm going to see if I can return part-time, I said, and if not, I'll find something that allows me to be able to be with Tyler most of the time. I'm so proud of you, Mike said, and I leaned against his warm, solid body. My decision had given me a deep sense of peace, and the fear that had chased me for months was suddenly gone. I returned to work 2.5 days a week and spent the rest of my time being a mommy. When I'm with my son, I realize I'm more like Mom than I ever thought I'd be. She was the one who taught me to be patient and loving. She gave me the humor and strength needed to be a parent. Ma, more than anything else, I want to be for Tyler what Mom was for me, the wind beneath my wings.
Okay, that's the end of my first story. If you tuned in late, this is the Romance Program with Volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I apologize, I've had some allergy problems reading this, and so I'm a little off on my voice, but I'm getting through this, so sorry about that. So now I have another story, also from True Confessions magazine, and it's called Back to My Roots. Here's the story. I had worked for William Stamos for 5 years before he ever threw me a curve. He'd been the most respectful and considerate boss ever. He always gave me comp time, Christmas bonuses, let me have a say about who was hired for the secretarial pool, paid my insurance, and never made a pass. He had daughters the same age as me, and he always said, "Addison, I have daughters out in the workforce. I treat you like I would hope someone would treat them." I not only appreciated Mr. Stamos, I loved my job. I grew up on a farm and couldn't wait to get a city job away from cows, feed, and mud. Once I earned an associate's degree in business, I moved to St. Louis to find a paying job instead of continuing my studies. I was lucky to get in with Stamos Fabrication, a small family-owned manufacturing business. I became Mr. Stamos' right hand in the office, and well, the rest is history. One day early last summer, Mr. Stamos came out of his office followed by Bob Hartman, his friend and one of the company's suppliers. "Addison, it's time to plan the quarterly meeting. Bob has a good idea for a fishing trip this time." "I think we'll do it," Mr. Stamos said. Meanwhile, Bob Hartman was holding out a business card that said, "Eagle's Nest, Fish Your Troubles Away," followed by a phone number. "It certainly won't be the posh stay that Branson offers, but I hear it sits on the lake that offers some great fishing," Bob explained. My heart sank. I always accompanied Mr. Stamos at these business meetings, and I loved Branson. I wasn't really needed much on these trips, but Mr. Stamos liked me to be available, and he offered me lots of free time during the 3 or 4 days away. "Addison, when you set up the plans, you'll have to take into consideration that these are rooms for fishermen and not deluxe hotel rooms," Mr. Stamos explained. "While we have had single hotel rooms, I'm guessing you will book a couple of men to each room, maybe three. Of course, get whatever for yourself." "I would gladly share my bunk with you," offered Mr. Hartman. I ignored his lecherous implications. "You had better check on food arrangements too, Addison. I hear the area is rather isolated. We might have to batch it some." "Great," I thought. "I am going to the hills." I was not feeling generous and open-minded. The next day, I called the Eagle's Nest number from the card. I talked to an older woman who said the owner was doing repairs, but she would answer my questions. Apparently, this fishing cabin was about 20 miles from anything commercial and 10 miles from a state park. The rooms had coffee pots, kitchenettes, 2 double beds, no Wi-Fi, and poor cell phone coverage. Boats and motors came with each room, and abundant fishing was promised. Sounded like a dream trip for someone, but not for me. I reserved 5 rooms for 8 men. I planned a grocery list. There was no conference room, but since I was using my room alone, I figured the men could carry a chair each and gather around my table for their meetings. I'd made reservations for one evening's dinner at Antonio's in Eureka Springs. In late June,
We flew into the airport and picked up the two minivans I had reserved. Mr. Shamus was gracious enough to let me ride shotgun as he drove one of the vans. We made a quick stop at a grocery store. Sam Waterman and Bob Hartman started laughing when they saw a dog on the porch. "Look at that coon hound," Sam said. "The way he's sleeping, he must have treed a bunch last night." I was silent, but I thought to myself, "Oh, Ducky, I am in the land of hee-haw." As if my imagination conjured him up, a hillbilly walked out from the office. He was a brawny fellow in overalls. Gavin McDonald put his paintbrush on the ledge and pushed his Kansas City Royals baseball cap off his forehead. "Greetings, men. I was just refreshing the paint on Unit 3C. Then he noticed me and added, "Ma'am," sounding like little Abner. Our rooms were all in the second unit, some up, some down. I was lucky enough to be on the ground floor. I could also walk out my door, step out onto a rock patio, and gander over a huge lake of sapphire water with rocky bluffs hugging its edge. I had to admit it was beautiful. While I stood admiring the scenery, the men were already marching off to a boat. I thought I would take a walk and headed up the pavement to the motel office. When I got there and opened the screen door, the painter, still wearing his baseball cap, seemed to be paying bills. "Excuse me, Mr. McDonald, are those woods private land, or could I take a walk in there?" He leaned back in his office chair, took the magnifying glasses off his nose, and looked at my feet, shod in stylish but sturdy sandals. "First of all, I'm Gavin. Secondly, the woods belong to me. It's land that goes with the motel, and you are free to explore them. But thirdly, I wouldn't advise you go in with those shoes. Don't you have some ankle-high work boots or some cowboy boots, even? These are durable walking sandals with heavy-duty soles," I informed him. "Well, maybe, but I'd say one of those timber rattlers would find that uncovered toe a mighty fine morsel to chew on." He laughed. I felt my face steam, but my skin crawled at the thought of a snake sneaking out from the leaves. "Maybe I will just wait until later for a walk. The grill needs to be started for steaks later. Any rules on that?" I snapped. "Nope, Miss Nelson, unless I can call you Addison, that is. The grill is gas, and I'm sure you've seen it on the patio. Let me know if you need anything else." That evening, the men gathered around a picnic table, sipping bottles of beer. After the plates were cleared, we all continued to sit outside. In the twilight, Gavin McDonald sauntered down his balcony steps and headed our way. "Your supper smelled delicious, folks." "I smelled the beef, though." "Fishing no good today?" Gavin asked. The men assured him fishing was fine, but steaks were the choice for tonight. "It is lovely here, and anything would taste good in this fresh air," added Mr. Stamus. "I'm surprised to hear such classic tunes. Is that Gershwin I'm hearing?" I asked. Gavin looked at me square in the eye. "Yes, it is. Not all of us down here in the hills listen exclusively to washboard and spoons." The next morning, the men were up at dawn. Not me. I was about to roll up my towel and head for the room when the fishermen came into sight around the bend. I waited as their bass boats bobbed up to the dock, several strings of fish and chatter as to who was cleaning them. Greeted me. Mr. Stamus urged them to notice the time. Are we on time for our reservations, Addison?
Yes, sir.
Young MacDonald offered us his 11-passenger van. I figured you wouldn't mind having a young stud along with us old fogies for a change. I invited him to drive us instead and to join us for dinner. I rode as far in the back seat as I could and said little on the half-hour drive over there. Gavin grasped my elbow and snarled, "Just so you know, I did not invite myself." Once inside, William Stamos tapped me on the arm. "I'm sorry, Addison, about Bob's meddling. I can see Gavin is as uncomfortable as you are." Antonio's was housed in an old home with small rooms and had the original wood floors. I felt my irritation fading. I was relieved to be away from Bob Hartman's eyes. "You know, the success of my motel depends on a reputation of being nice to folks, Ozark welcomes, and all that. But I'm sorry I catered to lewd old Hartman at the expense of your evening." I realized I'd been something of a spoiled brat, and Gavin was just trying to make a living the same as I was. I smiled despite myself. "Maybe I should get to know you better." The meal was delicious. Marilyn couldn't cut it down here. No drama, no nightlife, unless you count croaking frogs and cold beer as a night out. She had no place to wear her designer suits, and the well-dressed here consider a t-shirt emblazoned with a hooked bass as fashioned. So he's talking about his wife. She left me. My hand could not help but crawl across the linen table as I heard both the tenderness and hurt in his voice. I decided right then not to assign myself a back seat for the ride back. Once back at the motel, men fell out all the doors, heading for their rooms. Gavin spoke to me. "I could show you a good place to stroll." I looked at my dainty espadrilles and nodded. We drove to the state park a few miles away and walked across a wide expanse of low grass. "The trout fishermen keep this path beaten down." "There is no place prettier than this part of the earth. Smell the air." I had to agree. I was looking at the twin moons reflected in Gavin's dark eyes when he kissed me. A deep and promising kiss. I felt like a trout snagged on a sturdy hook. I was more than ready to be reeled into Gavin's life. After a very late night, I awakened slowly the next morning. I'd just gotten out of the shower when I thought I heard my cell phone. "Addison, this is William. Maybe heart attack, 911. After cutting out the phone, flashed a no service sign. I threw off the towel wrapped around my wet head and raced to find Gavin. "Morning, sunshine. What is it?" "I just got a phone call from Mr. Shamus. He cut out, but I caught the words heart attack and 911. What should I do?" He was down the steps in a flash. By the time the ambulance got there, we found Gavin giving Bob Hartman CPR on the wooden boards of the dock. The paramedics took over and loaded him for the hospital. William Stamos and Sam Waterman followed in one of our minivans while the rest of the men packed up to leave for home. Looking at my air-dried curls springing everywhere and trying to lighten the moment, Gavin said, "Lovely natural dew you're wearing today." "Funny," I chided back. "Do you think he'll be okay? Bob, I mean. Sure, we may not have a big medical center, but we have good doctors." "Your hillbillies are wonder boys for sure," I chided him. Gavin looked up at me. "Addie, don't go. Stay." A lump came to my throat. I haven't started packing my own things yet. I stayed with Gavin and I never looked back. Mr. Stamos understood completely and even attended our fall wedding. Bob Hartman recovered from his heart attack but had to retire. For a wedding gift, he sent us cash to use on refurbishing the motel with a note saying he was coming back to the lake soon for the fish that got away. A year later, I have a closet full of denim, drink my wine from a jelly jar, and own a dulcimer. I'm learning to play. I've never been happier, and I feel like a lucky woman since I found a hillbilly lover. Okay, that's the end of that story, and that's going to do it for this romance program. This has been Volunteer Dear Jeannie Ost for Sun Sounds. Have a great day. Take care. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.